The University of Chicago has told incoming freshmen that it does not support safe spaces or trigger warnings. Instead, they want to promote discussion and rigorous debate, and they warn students that this may cause them some discomfort. This hour, we're going to talk about how colleges are reacting to increasing racial and ethnic tensions on their campuses. And we invite you to weigh in on this week's big question: which approach do you think is better at dealing with multiculturalism in higher education? We have an online poll, and you can choose a number of responses. Among them, we need to encourage the free exchange of ideas, or we need to work on ending microaggressions. And you can also tell us that you're not sure. You can get to the poll by going to WPR.org/joy. So how do you feel about all of this? What do you make of the University of Chicago's emphasis on academic freedom? Have colleges become too politically correct with regard to speech, or do you support diversity training and cultural awareness efforts? And maybe you have a story to share about racism, sexism, or bias. Likewise, maybe tell us about how your speech or expression was stepped on in the name of cultural sensitivity. It's a touchy subject. Join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email address talk@WPR.org. You can also post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and again, weigh in on our big question, online poll at WPR.org/joy. My guest is Donald Downs, retired professor of political science and an affiliate professor of law and journalism at UW-Madison. His areas of expertise include freedom of speech, academic freedom, political thought, and campus politics. Professor Downs, welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
I'm glad to be here.
So as an analyst, what do you make of the University of Chicago saying no to safe spaces and trigger warnings?
Well, it shows the the tensions that you talked about in the introduction, and it clearly articulates one side of the debate, which is probably the most prominent voice on that side right now, the University of Chicago. So it's just indicative of all the debates we're having right now.
Well, just so we're all on the same page, when we use the terms safe spaces and trigger warnings, what do we mean?
Well, the idea is it's sort of on a continuum. Certainly, students should feel safe on campus, physically safe. They should feel that they're not in any kind of intimidating or threatening kind of situation. But in recent times, there's been an expansion of that kind of concern to the idea that students should be intellectually safe, or that ideas that they find either hostile or even discomforting, or sometimes in more extreme cases, ideas that they just disagree with, that they should be sheltered from those. And so what authorities that are trying to draw the proper kind of balance are trying to do is to figure out, when is it that speech crosses a line and becomes, genuinely threatening to a reasonable person, as opposed to speech that is simply that makes one uncomfortable because one disagrees with it strongly. The latter should be protected because that's what the university is about.
Well, in its letter to the class of 2020, the University of Chicago said that its commitment to academic freedom means, quote, "we do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial," end quote. How often does that kind of thing happen on college campuses?
Well, we have a lot of colleges and universities in the country, but it's happened several hundred times in recent years, the last two or three years. The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE, which is located in Philadelphia, Washington, and New York, keeps a tab of this. And they have a list of somewhere between 200 and 300 cases where speakers, even people like Michael Bloomberg, have been disinvited after having been invited to a campus because certain groups oppose their expressing their viewpoints. So the disinvitation thing is a pretty serious idea. Microaggressions are comments that people make that offend others, often unintentionally because they're not fully aware of where that person's coming from or, what that person believes. To some extent, guarding against microaggressions is just simply trying to be civil and to have good manners. But when it becomes a kind of ideology that you should never say anything that upsets somebody, then it becomes much more of a concern for free speech.
The university argues that the free exchange of ideas helps build a welcoming campus. How does it do that?
Well, I guess it depends. Some campuses are arguing that free speech is unwelcoming, so it really depends on, you know, where you're coming from. But, you know, the idea of a university is that students should be exposed to as many ideas as possible and learn how to deal with them constructively. If we only are exposed to ideas that we agree with, there's really no intellectual growth, and there's some psychologists have shown recently there's less emotional growth, that learning how to respond in a constructive way to ideas with which we disagree actually contributes to emotional growth, and that should be part of education.
Well, I mean, it's certainly college is, I thought, was supposed to be a time when we had our assumptions challenged and we were forced to think about the things we believe in to make sure that they were still worthwhile.
Right.
And certainly, I don't think anybody's saying that we shouldn't be doing that. But it's not really clear what we are saying. Are colleges supposed to be hothouses where we protect everybody from everything? How do we learn from that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to learn how to draw the line between and how to properly balance civility, civil discourse, learning how to engage with ideas that we find disagreeable, even uncomfortable. How do you properly draw that balance between due respect for other people and encouraging as much speech as possible? It's a difficult line to draw. The clear line is that if someone engages in something that would constitute a threat, or, you know, a sort of fighting word, a comment to somebody that is likely to provoke a hostile physical reaction, like even a fight, those are things that, you know, should be discouraged. But in trying to encourage civil discourse, sometimes we go a little bit too far, and we say you shouldn't say something that might even offend somebody. I mean, all sorts of ideas offend people. Offense alone cannot be a grounds for punishing or sanctioning speech. And then so even if you don't want to have a speech code that prohibits certain kinds of speech, we now have these programs designed to try to instill more respect and make a more respectful campus. And those can be fine if they're done right. The problem is if they send sort of a subliminal or more subtle message that you should never say anything that might upset somebody or that might have a quote-unquote negative impact on somebody, then you're engaging in a chilling effect on discourse, and people are going to be afraid to say things to each other. So it is a difficult line to walk. But I think that, you know, the first point should be that we will not engage in censorship. And then the second point should be that freedom of discourse should have priority in terms of our values, because that's what a university is distinctively about. And then you start talking about how we can engage in that kind of discourse in the most constructive way, which does involve talking about what civil discourse is as opposed to uncivil discourse.
We have a comment from Jamie on Facebook who writes, it depends on what the goal is. Are we interested in teaching young adults to be resilient, independent, creative thinkers, or comfortable, submissive followers? And I think that's that speak to a point that that you made earlier.
Right, and that's really part of First Amendment and free speech theory and law. The idea is that freedom of speech should encourage people or help develop their capacity to have intellectual courage and control of their emotions. And so we build character by exposing students in the right kind of way to wide-open discourse.
Another point needs to be made here, though, and that's, I mean, from the perspective of the discussion that we're having here right now, I mean, I'm coming at this, some would say, from the position of white male privilege. I would have, whether I acknowledge it or not, an inherent bias in favor of what makes me comfortable.
Right, and that's been talked about a lot. And, you know, that's something we should be aware of. But, you know, privilege is a very complicated kind of thing. I know a lot of white males that come from disadvantaged backgrounds on the campus. And there's some groups that we often look at as being disadvantaged in terms of the broader category they belong to who come from more privileged backgrounds. So we have to be careful when we talk about that. Indeed, there is a difference in terms of broader categories of race when it comes to economic status and privilege in the United States, and that's something that has to be faced and acknowledged. You don't want to censor that idea. But when it comes to participating in discourse in the university, we need to know that we're all in the same kind of, we share the same kind of common ground, that we all should be free to say what we want to say, that there are certain educational purposes that have to be furthered through free speech, and that those should apply to everybody. You shouldn't give anybody a Trump card to say, well, because you're more privileged than I am, you shouldn't be able to say what you want to say. You're free to respond about that person having privilege, but you're not free to tell that person that they should not be able to talk.
Well, what I don't mean to impinge on your freedom, but we do need to get to the news. We'll continue our discussion with Donald Downs, an expert on freedom of speech on college campuses. We want to hear from you. What do you make of the University of Chicago saying it will not promote safe spaces for incoming freshmen? Do you wish more colleges would take that position, or does there need to be a strong emphasis on microaggressions? 800-642-1234, or take the Joy Cardine, big question poll, and let us know what you think. John Munson in for Joy on the Ideas Network of WPR. In an effort to promote academic freedom, the University of Chicago says it does not support safe spaces or trigger warnings, but discussion and debate. Other colleges are emphasizing various forms of diversity training to help reduce incidents of racism and bias. So which approach do you think is best at fostering a welcoming campus environment? That's this week's big question. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Donald Downs, retired professor of political science and affiliate professor of law and journalism at UW-Madison. And wondering what you think. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or you can post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And remember, you can weigh in on our Big Question online poll by going to WPR.org/joy. That's WPR.org/joy. So, Professor, there was a piece posted at Vox.com titled, "I'm a Black Chicago Graduate. Safe Spaces Got Me Through College." In it, the person writes that he needed safe spaces like the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs not to hide from ideas and perspectives at odds with his own, but to heal from relentless hate and ignorance. He said his ideas were challenged, but never his humanity. So this writer claims he doesn't mind free thought as long as it's not full of hate. Where's the line, then, between free speech and needing a safe space?
Well, every university, and just in life, people do seek to have safe spaces. You know, you work, you have a hard job, you come home, and you sit back in your chair, and you have a safe space. You have friends around you, you have family around you. Safe spaces, as a general idea, is part of living, and it helps us refuel for our further engagements. The question is whether or not a safe space concept can be expanded to cover the public forum of a university, or to, you know, a classroom where ideas should be clashing. So it's really a question of time, manner, and place, and proportion. If a speaker is going to come in that I find controversial, and I claim, well, if that violates my safe space, I now feel less safe at this university because there's an idea that's being presented out there in the public forum or in another class that I don't like, then that pretty much undermines what the university is about. So it really comes down to properly defining what a safe place is and how far it should extend.
Here's another piece of that University of Chicago policy or letter. It says, while the university does not support, require, or encourage trigger warnings, it does not prohibit them,
right,
leaving discretion to the professor on whether to warn students of certain material. How do you suppose professors are going to take that kind of flexibility?
Well, I think that's probably the proper approach. I wrote a piece about a year and a half ago, a nationally syndicated column on trigger warnings, and the first thing I said is that the real problem is making them mandatory. And if you make them mandatory, you know, from the top down from the administration, you have two problems. One is normative, that you're sending a message that we should be consciously on guard of what we say, and that sort of stifles freedom of expression and intellectual honesty. But there's a huge practical problem. What do you trigger? What do you not trigger? And once you open the door to a more mandatory or broad kind of trigger warning policy, a professor might trigger warning 20 things, and some students say, well, what about this thing? What about that thing? So it's a real slippery kind of slope. It should be left to the considered discretion of the instructor. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I gave a trigger warning a couple of years ago in a First Amendment class. It was just purely voluntary. If the administration had made me do it, I probably wouldn't have done it. I would have protested what the administration did. But I just thought it's a matter of decency. We're dealing with a case that involved violence against animals in a sexualized context. And I told the students, you're going to read this case, and it does have some graphic examples, and it's highly distasteful, and it's something that might really bother you. So I gave him a trigger warning, but that was just purely at my own pedagogical discretion, and it didn't interfere with the discussion whatsoever. So I think it's good Chicago didn't say you can't use them. I mean, that would pose an academic freedom kind of problem on the other side. You'd be telling an instructor that here's something you can't do, though you think it's a good thing to do in class.
Let's take a call from Saul in Stevens Point next. Let's see if we can get that up there. No. Okay, here we go. Saul, there you are.
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Well, I'm an old-timer from University of Chicago, and in the late 60s, a student arranged a debate between the American Communist Party and the John Birch Society, and if you know who those guys are, it was perfect. And they overfilled Rockefeller Chapel, which holds 1,500 people, packed. And on one side was the representative of the American Communist Party, and on the other side was a guy, and he was a colonel, a retired colonel who represented the John Birch Society. And the American Communist Party got up there, and he gave his spiel, and everybody's cheering, and we're young, radical, thinking kind of students. And the John Birch guy got up there, and before he said a word, the boos were just overwhelming. And at some point he said, you know, this is the United States of America, and I thought I had the freedom of speech. And he got booed off the stage.
Wow.
And he walked out. And then it turned out, a few days later, that the representative from the John Birch Society said, no way am I going to do this. And so this student hired an actor. So we were booing an actor. And since that time, I've just felt students should be fooled at some time to realize just how many times this happens, so that when you're listening to somebody, you're not just listening to what they say, but asking yourself, who is this guy? I wish we had more of that, and I'm totally in favor of the UC policy as it exists today.
Saul, thanks for sharing that story with us, Professor.
Itself. Is the caller still there?
Yeah, you know what? I think we just lost him.
Oh, I wish I knew what year that was, so I could kind of put it in the context of, you know, what was going on campus at the time.
Well, he was talking about the 60s. Yeah,
right.
I believe it was late 60s.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, you know, back in the 60s, I went to college, late 60s, graduated in 71, and my wife went to Wisconsin during the same time, and a lot of stuff was going on. What students were calling for at that time was more free speech, not less. More freedom, mm-hmm. not less. They wanted to, you know, taking down in loco parentis was a major victory for college students back then. They wanted to be treated as young adults. And now things seem to have sort of turned around and done a 180 in terms of that. A lot of these policies are being called for by students. Now, earlier you quoted a student who was talking about there's a difference between a controversial idea and hate. Mm-hmm. And, well, of course there is. Should hate be protected? Well, as a general matter of speech, there's a lot of political speech, a lot of speech against Donald Trump, a lot of speech against Hillary Clinton does have some hate in it. Hate alone cannot be a basis for saying that something shouldn't be said. But if the hate is directed toward intimidating somebody, you know, in a direct kind of way, or represents a meaningful kind of threat, then it crosses a line, and it's proper for the university to deal with that. I think there's a difference between physical safety and feeling about your physical safety and intellectual safety. We should never feel intellectually safe. We should always feel intellectually challenged and on edge. That's part of education. But by the same token, people have a right to feel safe in their personhood. And a threat. There's a case at the University of Wisconsin fairly recently where students, I was out of town. I was in Florida. But if I recall, they painted swastikas or something like that on a student's door. Now, clearly that's a directed threat, given the meaning of what a swastika is. And apparently the students were Jewish, if I recall correctly. That clearly crosses a line. But to say a speaker shouldn't come in, say Donald Trump shouldn't be allowed to give a talk at a university. Or some universities have actually told students you can't put up pro-Trump posters. because that intimidates some students. That just was really inappropriate to do that, to not allow that.
Speaking of UW-Madison, the university is rolling out a pilot program that will expand its diversity training to 1,000 freshmen this fall. What does that program consist of?
Well, I haven't looked at all the details. Apparently, it was released yesterday, and someone from the State Journal sent me a copy of it, which I did not open up and see until right before your call this morning. So I just had a chance to look at it very briefly. It's kind of a broader kind of sensitivity training, being aware of diversity, diverse backgrounds, diverse values, so we're more aware of the nature of the people that we're dealing with, so we can deal with them in a more mature and informed way. If the program is done correctly, then I would not have any objections to it. The question is, is it going to be done in a way which could be too heavy-handed? There are two potential problems that I see that have to be guarded against. One is the definition of what would constitute a grounds for a bias report against somebody. It's sort of anonymous complaints about people if they say something which could, quote, have a negative impact on somebody. Negative impact is an incredibly broad and vague term. If someone just doesn't like what you said, I suppose that could be a negative impact, and then that person's going to be informed against behind that person's back. Now, that's really that could send a real chilling effect around the campus. The other is if the program is applied in a kind of heavy-handed way, which is condescending, disrespectful of intellectual differences, even in a subtle way, which sends a kind of psychological message, it could really inhibit students from speaking honestly about issues of importance. And we don't want a campus where students are afraid to speak out. So the devil's in the details in this kind of policy.
Well, in addition to safe spaces and trigger warnings, we also hear about the term microaggressions, which are defined by an official at Clark University as comments, snubs, or insults that communicate derogatory or negative messages that might not be intended to cause harm, but are targeted at people based on their membership in a marginalized group. Examples would include, what are you? You are so interesting looking, or telling a non-white woman, I would have never guessed that you were a scientist. Why are colleges, including UW-Madison, focusing so much on microaggressions today?
Well, because there have been more complaints about them. I mean, a lot of this has to do with sort of the politics of the campus. More students are becoming aware of being offended in this way. 10 years ago, it's something they either would have just shrugged off, or they might have just said, okay, this is something I have to deal with. I don't like it, but I still have to deal with it. Now they kind of want something done about it. Sort of students moving back toward relying more on the administration to make their lives better. So I think that's got something to do with it. Clearly, I talked earlier about civility and basic manners, at least briefly, and there's nothing wrong with promoting that and talking about that. It's good to be aware of the things that could seriously offend somebody else, just as a matter of manners. And I know, as having been a teacher myself and interacted with a lot of students, I'm thinking that way all the time. I don't want to offend somebody for the mere sake of offending that person. Because I respect that person. Mm-hmm. It's okay to promote those kinds of things. So the problem is that the microaggression movement has also an ideological undertow, which can end up pushing a kind of politically correct kind of agenda. At some schools, even using the word America has been considered a microaggression, because there are other countries in the Western Hemisphere that might want to consider themselves America. Another one, talking about equality of opportunity, is considered a microaggression at the University of California system. One of these great American classic ideas, equality of opportunity. Well, because some people don't have the same opportunity as others. So we're sort of, it has a potential of pushing a kind of radical egalitarian agenda, which ends up being a stifling form of political correctness. So again, it's a question of its extent and how it's done.
Let's take a call here. Jan is with us in Lynchburg, Virginia. Jan, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. It's interesting that you actually just mentioned egalitarianism. You know, I was just studying this topic for a course that I'm in, you know, and the idea of equality of opportunity versus equality of outcome. I think
right.
Something that we struggle with when trying to define what egalitarianism is in this country. But my point was, is I feel that the extremes that we've seen, you know, this idea of trigger warnings and safe spaces go to is a natural consequence of the consumerization of college in America. You know, we have colleges that have shifted from, you know, the fundamental principle of education to basically almost turning into glorified versions of high school for kids that are going in. You know, we've got colleges that are, you know, in this arms race to one-up one another with amenities and extracurriculars and things that are not related to academics. And it almost seems like this element of safe spaces and trigger warnings is just another part of that.
That's a really interesting point, and I've written about this and talked about it out on the circuit a bit, how these kinds of new policies are, to a significant extent, not entirely, but to a significant extent, extensions of other things going on in the university, seeing students as consumers, students wanting to be satisfied consumers is one aspect of that you alluded to. 10 years ago, I was at an academic freedom conference in Loyola in California, L.A., and a woman student stood up and said proudly, my parents pay $30,000+ a year. Now I think it's a lot more than that, but it's 10 years ago. $30,000+ a year, I should have the right never to be offended by an idea that I don't like. Now, granted, that's an extreme version of that kind of mentality. And the room was just sort of aghast, and yet that found some support in the student body. So the point is, I think universities have been fulfilling so many different kinds of agendas and different kinds of purposes. You know, athletics, job training, various practices to help us, you know, the internships, things like that. There's so many things that we do that we've lost sight of what our fundamental purpose is, and that is to educate, push the frontiers of knowledge, and to instill the virtues, intellectual virtues, one of which is respecting freedom of thought. We have an identity crisis in higher education, and you know, the cost of education is another aspect of that. It's so expensive now. Why should I have to be offended? Why should I have to be challenged? So we have an identity crisis, and this is a manifestation of it.
Well, there's that whole sifting and winnowing thing that we're supposed
right.
to be doing at the University of Wisconsin, and that would be a whole other program. We're getting close to news time. Jan, thank you so much for calling in from Lynchburg, Virginia this morning, obviously an online listener, because I don't think any of our FM signals reach that far. 800-642-1234. We know that number reaches that far. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. You can also find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook, and a lot of people have. We've got some Facebook comments to share. We're going to take a break for the news in just a moment. I wanted to mention our online poll that you can weigh in on our big question debate, and you can go to WPR.org/joy, WPR.org/joy. And weigh in on our online poll about this topic. Should we be creating safe spaces for students on campus? Or do we need to err on the side of free speech and challenging ideas? What's your thinking on that? WPR.org/joy. Again, 800-642-1234. If you were attending the University of Chicago this fall, would you be happy or concerned about its stance on freedom of expression? And what do you think of UW-Madison's pilot program this fall to expand its diversity training for freshmen? 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. We'll be back with Donald Downs and your calls after this news. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. J. John Munson in for Joy Cardine with you here on the Ideas Network of WPR. This is our weekly Big Questions segment, and today we're taking a look at the University of Chicago's new policy of not supporting safe spaces or trigger warnings for students. We're asking if you applaud or condemn this position. Donald Downs is our guest. He's a retired professor of political science and an affiliate professor of law and journalism at UW-Madison. If you were attending the University of Chicago this fall, would you be happy or worried about its stance on freedom of expression? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Weigh in on our Joy Cardine Show poll. You can do that, WPR.org/joy. Give us your views. We'll reveal the results of the poll before the end of the hour. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Thomas is with us in Chippewa Falls. Thomas, hello.
My question is in regards to minorities in general. I would like to say that overall, I believe in listening to this conversation that I agree with your guest's position. However, I am deeply troubled by some of the ways in which that thought process has kind of been discussed in the course of the show. And one thing I took note of was that your guest said that he graduated, I believe, in the early 70s, 71. And I'm curious if he is willing to tell us what his nationality is on air, and then I have a question for him after that.
Nationality? I'm a U.S. citizen. Hello?
Thomas, are you there?
Yep. I'm the ethnicity.
You want me to ethnicity? I'm white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And your point is?
Okay. Well, my point is I can actually hear that through the radio. And there is something to be said about age and race playing a factor in this discussion. I would like to say that I'm a young white male, and I went through college a little bit more recently. I graduated in 2010, and I felt that I routinely had to go to the defense of other minority students, and I felt comfortable doing that because I'm also gay. And it's hard to explain when you're a minority group, but I can hide my minority, and other minorities cannot. And there is not really a champion currently in our system that allows people to speak up. I am very troubled when I hear something on a program like this where I hear your guests say we should always challenge students, which is correct, but then in the next statement say we should intellectually threaten students. They should always feel threatened and on edge.
Well, I didn't say that.
Very dangerous thing.
Well, there's a difference between being intellectually challenged, and by intellectual threat, I meant the idea that you should be your intellect should never be free from strong challenge. And you know, maybe threat's not the right word to use there because it sort of confuses the categories. But a lot of students that have said, for example, that Donald Trump shouldn't come to campus, Michael Bloomberg shouldn't come to campus because of he's a Republican, though a moderate Republican, they are sort of using the language of intellectual threat when you talk about it, because they want a safe space from that. So maybe I could use a better word, but there is a distinction between strong intellectual challenge and feeling physically threatened.
Thomas, thanks for sharing your perspective with us. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Maureen in Woodruff, you'll be on next. Maureen, good morning.
Hi. I'm a student of higher education leadership at Edgewood College, just finishing up. And one of our courses that we had that was extremely wonderful was a course on diversity. And, you know, I kind of thought, oh, you know, I think I've read a lot about this, and I have a lot of friends who are black, and they tell me what their experience was like. But I feel like until you actually have someone, that the professor was Dr. Charles Taylor, and he was he's a black professor who went to Madison. But until you have someone leading a discussion that really truly gets into what it is like to be black in Wisconsin, black in America, and just those really deep discussions that you might not even have with any of your friends who are black and other races as well, of course, I just don't feel like we as white individuals really grasp a lot of the concepts that and the feelings and fears that African Americans and other minority groups have. So I totally am shocked that Chicago would, you know, vote something like that down, basically, for the, especially at a university where, you know, higher education is really about learning. So I was disappointed to hear that.
Maureen, thanks thanks for the call. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join our discussion. Donald Downs, what do you have to say about what Maureen was bringing up there?
I mean, I think she makes a good point. And that's really part of the marketplace of ideas and the openness of discourse as well, is learning what other people think and what other people can bring to the table from their distinctive kind of backgrounds. You know, there's no necessary conflict between diversity, broadly understood, this involving your race, nationality, those kinds of identity backgrounds, and diversity of ideas. They all go together. The session she's talking about actually expands knowledge and expands understanding, which would be very consistent with the more traditional notion of the university as a place for sifting and winnowing. But the problem then is, if you take that one step further and say, therefore, we should not be exposed to ideas that counter what's being said, for example, in that session that she was talking about, or that are inconsistent with our own beliefs. I think what she's talking about expands understanding and knowledge, but it should not be a basis for restricting it.
Maureen, thanks so much for that call. We have a comment from April on Facebook who says, our discussion today depends on the goal. Creating a welcoming environment, safe spaces would likely help. But is the goal of college to be welcoming or to prepare students for the real world? There aren't safe spaces in the real world except those of your own making.
Right. I think that's pretty similar to what I said earlier, that there are safe spaces in the real world that are part of our everyday lives. And the problem is if the university takes that concept too far and says the whole university should be a safe space.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Will is with us in Ashland this morning. Will, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm on my way to my university right now. I go to Northland, which is a very open school. It's actually my first day today. I'm a transfer student from NWTC. I loved your guest answer, what is his nationality, American? That was awesome. I believe that we all need to identify that way. I'm actually Native American, Mexican, and white. I believe that the safe space and the political correctness is actually, you know, horrible for the students themselves. Now, I believe that it is good to be, you know, emotionally aware of other people. You need that. But on the other token, when you're going to school, you're there to develop your own convictions, and you have to have a strong point when you end school on which to further develop your lifestyle on. If you are afraid of being challenged or developing those skills, then college isn't right for you. You're supposed to go there and defend yourself and make your case stronger. And that comes through debates and through discussion and through an overwhelming understanding of the people around you and what's going on in the world. If you can't handle that, go home. I mean, you're there to develop yourself.
Okay. Will, we're starting to run short on time, and I'd like to hear Donald Downs' response to what you had to say.
Yeah, well, that certainly is the ultimate goal of the university, is to instill that kind of intellectual quality and character. And again, but it doesn't mean that we should not strive to be civil and to understand other people's points of views. There is kind of a, you know, two-way street here, but we have to keep in mind the ultimate purpose is to develop the kind of mindset that the caller talked about.
I'd like to try to get one more call in here. Kimani is with us in Green Bay. Kimani, good morning.
Hi, thanks for my call. I didn't hear the last commentator, but I'll just say as a black man, I think minorities are comfortable talking about race and white people are not. And it's because we are forced to deal with it every day. I actually disagree with a safe space or a right not to be offended, because I want to hear what other people are thinking. I need to know where my threats are. I need to know what my friends are. And I think we have to get more comfortable talking about race. I think that's a big problem in the country as it stands, because white people are just not comfortable. I actually feel them in my presence getting very uncomfortable when the subject of race comes up, and that's a problem. And shutting it out, even offensive things, especially at the university, because the university isn't just about learning, which is what a caller said earlier. It's about a specific type of learning. It is to learn how to
Okay. We're almost out of time. Kimani, I hate to cut you off, but I really want to hear from Donald Downs here because I think, Kimani, you just may have made the most important point of the hour.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. He really nailed it in terms of challenging ideas and being open to free and open discourse, sifting and winnowing, should include the kind of thing that he's talking about. It's a very important part of it. So that if whites are, some ways, whites are looking for their own kind of safe spaces, is what the caller's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that no race, white, black, whatever, should have be protected by inappropriate kinds of safe spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he really got right at the we need to have honest and open discourse in order to achieve racial justice in the country.
We have less than a minute left. Do you expect to see more and more colleges take a stand similar to the University of Chicago, or is the general trend still going to be toward more diversity training and things of that nature?
I think Chicago's opening the door for more schools to go in that direction. And maybe, this is part of a dialectical process. So you have the safe space argument, the microaggression movement. You have the movement against that. And maybe now we can move to a third stage where we properly integrate the ideas from that side without sacrificing the intellectual freedoms that are necessary to education.
All right. And you know what? I think that's a great place to leave it. We'll compile our poll results here in the last minute. But thank you, Donald Downs. Thank you for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate your time today. Donald Downs is a retired professor of political science and an affiliate professor of law and journalism at UW-Madison. And his areas of expertise include freedom of speech, academic freedom, political thought, and campus politics. Here is what our poll results look like. 72% of you say we need to encourage the free exchange of ideas. So I would say that's a pretty clear majority. 22% say we need to work on ending microaggressions. So there you have it. 5% aren't sure. So most of us say that would agree with the University of Chicago policy. Anyway. Thanks so much for joining us today. This hour was produced by Bill Martins, Nyasia Ellison, and Brian Shasso. I'm John Munson, and for Joy Cardine, you've been listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.